NBA Strayer. How you going? That's right, man. It's NBA Strayer. It's Friday, June 7. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet walking around stuff. And I'm here in Larry Armour Studios giving you the lowdown on who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, and who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA Finals today. Breaking down and wrapping up after every single day of NBA action while repping Strayer. Just a little bit, mate. This is what we do. All right. So, after our mega 300th episode yesterday with our new mate, Isaac Humphreys. That was awesome. Go make sure you've listened to it. Today's show breaks down the Nets opening up two max spots for the off-season. And so it begins. Some fun stuff. We've also got our epic Game 4 of the NBA Finals preview. That's right, man. We're going to ask three big questions about the Raptors and the Warriors each and then answer them. Not just going to ask the questions, we're going to answer them. That's right. And of course, we've got, we've got the unpopular opinion of the day, and we've got our back takehouse, where we're serving up a flame grilled take. Because it's Friday, we've also got a brand new Luke Longley bloke who just did their bloody job role player Hall of Famer. We'll take a quick look at all the odds for Game 4. We'll deliver up five of the best bets that'll probably not win you any money. But, I mean, you may as well give it a shot, I guess. And we're going to close out with a brand new Cooking with Bainesy. That's right, he's been in the kitchen. He's been filming his TV show, and Cooking with Bainesy is back. I love it. All right, man, it's going to be great. Trust me. I mean, you don't have to, but I just really hope it is. All right, man, this is NBA Strayer episode 301. Let's go.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Strayer.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
You better watch out for the Nets attack, I guess, if you're the New York Knickerbockers of New York City, huh? That's right. We're going to start today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia with a daily whip around. That's right. The Brooklyn Nets. The erstwhile Nets, who have a lot of my money, have traded Allen Crabbe in the number 17 pick in this year's draft, as well as a protected first in 2022, the Atlanta Hawks for Taurine, the Red Bull Prince, and a 2021 second round pick. Interesting stuff. How good's this? What do you reckon over there?
Interesting stuff.
That's what it is. It is interesting stuff because you know what this means for the Nets? Oh, shit, bro. This means they've opened up two maximum level salary slots under the salary cap going into this American summer, which is absolutely wild. It cleared $18 million in additional salary cap space, which is bananas. $46 million in salary cap space to sign a max free agent. And even they could actually sign a max free agent and retain D'Angelo Russell. And without D'Angelo, they have two max salary slots. So this is absolutely bananas. We're going to break it down a little bit more in YNR. But as Brian Windhorst tweeted, that's right, the sentient spud Brian Windhorst, the Knicks have two max slots, the Nets have two max slots, the Clippers can get to two max slots, the Lakers have a max slot plus the number four pick and assets to make a major move. July is going to be lit. That's right, man. So after all the ballyhooing and trying to get a hold of Allen Crabbe, Brooklyn finally get him for a couple of years and then go, oh, wait, this guy sucks, and trade him. Basically, to free up some cap space, so then go sign Kyrie Irving and, trade for Anthony Davis. Get Jimmy Butler as well. Who knows? It's going to be fun regardless. I've got an Allen Crabbe story I'll tell a little bit later as well. What are the news? The Yahoo Sports report last week of Dwight Powell opting out of his contract apparently was erroneous. Because apparently, according to reports, he's going to opt in and play for the Mavs with his $10.2 million worth of a contract for next season. And then sign an extension after July 5. Interesting. That's pretty good. It's weird that it always seemed weird that Dwight Powell was opting out. And you're like, Yahoo, really? Why the fuck would Dwight Powell opt out of $10.2 million? Like, is he really going to get more than that in the open market? I don't know. So if he opts in now and then signs an extension after July 5, I mean, Dwight Powell going to make that money? Good stuff, Dwight Powell. Speaking of the Mavs, the city of Dallas. That's right, down there in Texas. Has approved the renaming of a street, the To Nowitzki Way. Nice one. It was Olive Street, runs by American Airlines Center right there in Dallas. It's It's a lovely arena there in Dallas, too. Mark Cuban said, I'm excited for Dirk. That's nice. But I reckon we shouldn't just stop at a street. Dallas, go further. I feel like Dallas Fort Dirk, as opposed to Dallas Fort Worth, has got a nice ring to it. Dirkley Way, the Step Back Junction, the Dirk Repository, the Grassy Dirk. Let's call everything after Dirk. I love it. Let's do it, Dallas. Don't be cowards. Go whole one-legged into this Dirk Nowitzki renaming stuff. I love it. Some other coaching news. Ime Udoka. Spurs assistant Ime Udoka has joined Brett Brown's staff as the lead assistant over there on the Philadelphia 76ers. Taking over from Monty Williams, who's gone off to coach that shit show there in Arizona, the Phoenix Suns. So that's pretty good. I like this. This is also the old Brett Brown. If you fuck up, we've already got your replacement on staff. yeah, Brett Brown coaching for his job next year. You bets to believe it. And Ime Udoka is like one of those assistant coaches that everyone's like, wow, he should really be like in line for a head coaching job sometime in the future. And yeah, this is basically one of his next steps up, right? Because Brett Brown, if they start slow, they get a bit antsy. It's all over Red Rover. Bang on. Anyway, so Ime Udoka to the Sixers from the Spurs. Just that classic, you know, Sixers just trying to like get everybody from the Spurs, huh? Makes sense. All right, the final bit of news. Turns out the wanker who pushed and swore at Kyle Lowry in Game 3 there in Golden State is actually a minority owner slash investor in the Warriors. Oh, shit. Mark Stevens, right? And then it broke that he'd been banned for the rest of the finals. And then a little bit later, they're like, I don't know if they were judging like the reaction because the reaction was swift and like, what the fuck? That's nowhere near enough. They then announced a $500,000 fine and a one-year ban from all NBA activities, all team-related activities, everything for old Mark Stevens there. Not the Australian sports writer, Mark Stevens. I mean, we can go after him on Twitter if you want, but it's not going to make a damn difference. But still, so we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the year as well. But damn, $500,000, a one-year ban, swore vociferously at Kyle Lowry, pushed and shoved him, and this is what we get. Interesting. All right, so a bit of injury news. Kevin Durant is already out of Game 4 of the NBA Finals. With Shams out there for The Athletic reporting that Durant will be has already been ruled out of Game 4. Which is pretty crazy. Mark Stein had reported a couple of days ago that the Warriors had kind of loosely targeted Game 5 anyway, but everyone kind of vaguely expected maybe be okay for Game 4. Unfortunately, Durant has not actually been like participating in practice and like on-court stuff, so yeah, he's still a little bit far away, you reckon? That's what I reckon. Seems a bit dubious at this point. Because at Game 4, you feel like you could come back and still win the Finals MVP from Steph. Game 5 onwards might be a bit tougher, though. If it all happens anyway. Yeah. All right, so let's look at a bit of Game 4. Speaking of Game 4 and no Kevin Durant, let's do a little bit of a preview and get into our three big questions for each team. All right, let's do it. Three big questions each. Toronto. Heading into Game 4 tomorrow, they're coming off a massive, massive Game 3 win where they led from, what, post to finish, starting post to finish, that was all. It was pretty great. So the one big question is, off the top, can Kyle Lowry, big booty Kyle Lowry, stay big booty Kyle Lowry and not turn back into playoff spud Kyle Lowry? Can he step up again? Can he do it in back-to-back games on the road? Can Kyle Lowry be a difference maker in Game 4? The answer to this, I don't know. Yeah, nah. My guess is going to be he's going to be okay, but he's not going to be the devastating tour de force he was in Game 3. We're going to talk about some bets later. Like, his usual over-under with these points sits at around 13.5, and that is almost exactly where you'd expect him to land in Game 4, isn't it? I don't know, man. I feel like Lowry does have those little blips rather than streaks when it comes to the playoffs, where he'll play an amazing game. Like, remember, he played his ass off in Game 1 of the Milwaukee series and then didn't really have too many barn-burning turns the rest of the way, but he did have a couple of okay ones, and I've got a feeling Game 3 was his barn-burning game, and there'll be a couple more just okay Kyle Lowry games. So I think he'll step up, but I'm not entirely convinced he's going to give them quite enough tomorrow. Number two, can the Toronto Raptor big guys deliver that same energy and defensive pressure again that we saw in Game 3, where we had Serge Ibaka flying around blocking a gajillion bloody shots, Marc Gasol bodying Boogie Cousins up in there? I'm going to say, nah. I've got a feeling like this is, we talk about blips rather than streaks with Kyle Lowry. Marc Gasol is like just the Spanish version of that. The big, hairy, chunky Spanish version. The paella version. The sangria version. I'm not convinced that Gasol is going to have a really good game in Game 4. I feel like the Warriors were sort of thrown into a little bit of flux with the absence of Klay Thompson in Game 3 and sort of had to scramble going, shit, do we play Jordan Belmore? Shit, I don't know. Do we play more Bogut? Boogie just absolutely stinking up the joint really hamstrung the Warriors. And I've got a feeling he's going to have a better game. And I've got a feeling that that then leads to Marc Gasol struggling a little bit more. And maybe Serge Ibaka is covered a bit better by Jordan Bell. And I don't think they both deliver as well as they did in Game 3. So chalk that one down as a bit of a nah from me. Number three, does fun guy, board man gets paid. Does he ever kill a 45-point smack him down, I'm a bad MF of performance in him for Game 4? Oh, how good is this as a question? I feel like, he does. He's got it in him. I'm just not entirely convinced that he can get away with it and do it in an NBA Finals Game 4 when he's like matched up against Andre Iguodala and, you know, Klay Thompson on the other side of the perimeter there as well. So, look, if Kawhi came out and had a 45-point smack him down, I'm a bad MF a game, it wouldn't surprise me. But I just think the Warriors' D just will be a little bit too good in Game 4 to let that happen. So, there you go. But, oh, man. Would it surprise you that much? I don't think it would. Yeah, it'd be good to see him actually do it as well. And then we could throw up some pretty good questions about Kawhi versus LeBron, you know, who's the better player, etc. Anyway, the Warriors. What about the Warriors? The Golden State Warriors out there in Oakland. How about their first question? Number one, can Klay Thompson, that's right, old Stoney McStoneson over there, can Klay be effective once he's back and give them the second scorer that they needed next to Steph in Game 3? I think Klay will be very effective. He's probably obviously going to be a little bit stymied coming off all those screens and picks that he usually runs around. But at the same time, in terms of just catch and shoot, like Klay's fucking unbelievable. And it's clearly just like that floor spacing that the Warriors didn't have with him not out there. Suddenly you got Sean Livingston and no one's going to guard him outside of like 14 feet, let alone Klay where you could have, you know, cover him out to like 28. So I think he's just going to be effective, even if it's just the simple idea of him going, oh, cool. Well, I'm just going to post up over here. Well, post up. I'm going to stand over here in the corner. I'm going to stand here on like the junction elbow 3-point line bit. And Steph, you can do your thing. And that's going to be effective. Like that's an effective use of Klay Thompson. So I expect he'll be effective in that role. I don't expect him to go off and score a kajillion points, but I think just his sheer presence will make the Warriors look a lot better. And, you know, especially for Steph and Boogie, I think it'll really help. So speaking of which, can Boogie run 98 feet without needing to die? I think he can. I think Boogie has a big bounce back game in Game 4. I think everybody, after his Game 2, where he had like, you know, a sneaky sort of a 10 and 11, you're like, that was pretty bloody good. He's getting rebounds left, right, and center. He just looked completely undercooked in Game 3. I've got a feeling he comes out in Game 4 and just really puts his body on the line. I think he's been roasted about his horrible defensive efforts and stuff for the last day or two. And I think you see a bit more of an engaged Boogie out there. And I think he'll actually help that scoring burden off, you know, help carry it off of Steph and Klay a little bit more. Maybe he gets a couple of threes to go down. Who knows? But I feel like Boogie will be a little bit more effective than he was in Game 3, which wouldn't be bloody hard because he was shithouse. Absolutely shithouse. So number three, final question for the Warriors. This is a big one. Will they score more than 109 points in any game this series? I mean, you'd hope so. This much ballyhooed Warriors offense has gone 109, 109, 109 in all three games. I feel like for them to score over 109, I think they can do it. Klay gets going, Boogie gets going, Steph you know, throws up another 45-plus point game. Yeah, we get there, don't we? Anyway, so look, let's get to some of the top five favorite bets for game four. Make us some money. We're in the money so far, like this series. I mean, as mentioned, game one, we went 4 or 5. Game two, we went 3 or 5. And game three, we went 4 or 5 again. It's pretty bloody good. So, look, a couple of interesting... I don't really like too many ones in game four just because there's too many sort of question marks. But I do like the Golden State first quarter winners in game four. That's $1.64 at the moment. The stat, wildly enough, is the Warriors have won the first quarter in each of their last 9 games after losing a game as a favorite. So, that tells me, and I'm like, it sort of backs up my sort of feeling that the Warriors come out absolutely on fire because they've let Toronto do that last couple of games. And it's really stymied the Warriors' attack, where it's hard to be demoralizingly badass when you're the Warriors if you're always behind, you know? It took them until, what, the second half of game two to do that 18-0 run and then really get up and then really put the boot on the throat of the Raps. And even then, the Raps still almost came all the way back at the very end of the fourth quarter. So, I don't know, man. I feel like the Warriors come out on fire in the first quarter, and that's a pretty handy one. So, $1.64 for that. I like that one. It doesn't pay that great, but whatever. I don't really give a shit about the money. I'm just, like, looking for fun ideas. Siakam. There's a double here. Points and rebounds over of 25.5. That's $1.84. I like that one a lot. I feel like Sikkim Siakam had a very good, nice bounce back game in game three after a horrible game two and an amazing game one. But 25.5, including his rebounds and points, I feel like there's a very, very easy way for Sikkim Siakam to get to 25.5. And it's him just scoring and getting, you know, enough rebounds. Like, this isn't rocket surgery, this one. Because remember, he did go into game one as like the sort of under-heralded extra bonus dude who was kind of out there doing stuff. But he had 18 points in game three. He had 32 points, don't forget, in the game six against the Bucks too. So, yeah. So game one, he had 32 points, 18 points against the Bucks, 25 in game three against the Bucks. And he puts up pretty consistent rebounding numbers as well. He had 8 in both game 1 and 2 and then 9 in game 3. So, I mean, last game he just had 18 and 9 and bang, you're already at 27. So give me the over on Pascal Sikkim Siakam with the 25.5 combined points and rebounds. The Kawhi double-double, that's at $2.25. I'll take that as well. I feel like Kawhi, well, he obviously gets to double points. And I feel like he gets to double rebounds in this one too. He had 14 in game 2. He had 17 rebounds, don't forget, in that amazing game 6 against the Bucks. I feel like he gets to 10 in this one. I feel like Marc Gasol has a bit of a rough one, and the Raptors play a bit smaller with Ibaka sort of out there trying to combat Draymond. And I feel like that leads to a lot more Kawhi rebounds. So give me the Kawhi double-double at $2.25. The Draymond, the turnover bet, we had this in the last game. He had 4 turnovers. The over-under at that one was 3.5. Now it's up to 4.5. I might take the over on this. I feel like he lands on about 5, so I'm going to take the over. He might even go more than that because, again, no hobbled Clay. Iguodala not doing as much ball handling as you usually expect. Steph probably out there doing a lot more scoring. So give me the Draymond. I'm going to bring the ball up and turn it over 5 times. Give me that. That was at $1.68, I think, the last throw. And there's a nice one. I mean, I think Golden State are going to win this game. So the Golden State win is only $1.50, however. So I kind of like the Raptors' money line of +4.5 at the moment. That's $1.90. But if you really like the Golden State win straight up, I also like Steph Curry over 35-plus points and a Golden State win. That's over $3 at the moment, so I like that. Marc Gasol under 6.5 rebounds. That's $1.90. I love that one. But yeah, so I think my biggest one is probably Raps money line, 4.5. I like that. That gets you up to $1.92. I like the 4.5. And yeah, so Steph Curry, if you really, really feel like Golden State are going to win, Steph's going to score over 35, take that one. But I'm just going to settle on the Raps, I think, +4.5. Yeah, nice. Feels pretty good, doesn't it? Well, let's go out and make some money, I guess. I don't really care. Whatever. Just a fun way to talk about the games. All right, there you go. That's the betting preview for game 4 and a bunch of the questions asked. Let's get to Yeah Nahs right after. Oh, what's this? This one.
Hey, this is Isaac Humphries and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, how good was that? Isaac Humphries. doing a bit of a NBA Australia drop in there. That's great, isn't it? How good was he on yesterday's show? What a legend. That talking about drinking in Atlanta and hanging out with Vince Carter and figuring out that Vince Carter was a rookie the year that Isaac Humphries was born, and now they're teammates. Well, they were teammates. That's unreal. And obviously, as mentioned yesterday, we had the LA Clippers kind of scoop before anybody else, but we didn't publish it because, yesterday we had problems getting the 300 to show up. I don't know what the fuck was going on with iTunes, but it really did not want our 300th episode going up there. It's just that classic anti-Australian bias, isn't it? Anyway, let's do some where we take a bunch of NBA storylines, decide whether they're more or more nah, and straight off the bat, let's talk about Brooklyn. Was this a good trade for the Brooklyn Nets? This is the perfect trade for the Nets. They add a second max spot, they boot Crab to the curb with his underperforming ass over there, and all it cost them was pick number 17 and a very heavily protected future first. They still have picks 27 and 31 in this draft anyway, and I mean, we've all seen this draft, and it's basically a fucking crapshoot after what the top 3-4, and then everybody's boards are just a fucking shit show basically between 7 and 27 anyway, so whatever. But I love this because look, Allen Crabbe, in return they get Taurine the Red Bull Prince, a stretch four that they can sort of throw out there, plays pretty good defense, can shoot, and he's fucking way more consistent than goddamn Allen Crabbe, I'll tell you that much. Watching Crabbe, and I love Allen Crabbe, managed to be at, and this is the Allen Crabbe story I promised at the start. So Allen Crabbe, loved Allen Crabbe when he was on Portland, and I love the fact that the Nets were going after him, clearly liked him, and they clearly had like some inside sort of knowledge, like, all right, man, if we give this guy a bigger sort of role, he'll thrive, and we think he can be a really good underappreciated asset out there in Trailblazer land, so let's go get him. Let's do it. And this is cool. So every time Portland would come to Brooklyn, it's like, oh, man, Allen Crabbe, I really like him. Really hope they get him in free agency, well, you know, restricted free agency next year. Of course, while watching the Brooklyn Nets and the Portland Trailblazers play, I don't mind imbibing when I'm at a basketball game, at an NBA game. Get a couple of tins into ya, start smashing cans, just hit the go, fuck, this is great. A couple of beers at McMahon's just down the road from the Nets arena. Get some pho from Five Spice right there. It's great. It's unreal. And we also had our bartender guy. He was awesome. Fuck, what was his name? Will? Yeah. Anyway, he was awesome. He'd always hook us up. And because we were season ticket holders, he'd be like, all right, cool. You get the sweet discount on all the fancy beers. I'm like, all right, well, give me a fancy beer. And then you do that thing where you're like, oh, yeah, the fancy beers are like way more alcohol content. So you have like three of them. You're like, shit, I've had like about 80 pints. And you've been at the pub beforehand. So we're sitting there just going, oh, the Nets are getting absolutely shit pumped by the Trailblazers. And me and one of my best mates, old, I think actually might have been Lakers fan Tim. He and I are sitting there next to each other just swearing away going, this is fucking bullshit. God damn, I hate the Nets. Oh, they're the worst. Fuck all these guys. Fucking blah, blah, blah. Just doing the typical drunk Australian, just sort of sitting there talking to each other. Yeah, with a couple of cans, it's a little bit loud. The people behind us, these very delightful older people, older folk, are like, oh, are you enjoying it watching Allen Crabbe? It's like, oh, yeah, fucking hey, we are. He's awesome, isn't he? Fucking, yeah, fucking sick man. He's like, oh, we know him. It's like, oh, shit, really? It's like, yes, his mother is part of our church group. My buddy, Lakers fan Tim, and I had been sitting there swearing very loudly, quite vociferously, in front of a church group for about 45 minutes. They were all sitting there delightfully, happily ignoring us. And we then apologized for our language and then chatted to them about Allen Crabbe, and they talked about how he was a local boy and how beloved he was by his family and the family's church group and everything, and it was absolutely wild. I'm like, man, I can't wait for Allen Crabbe to get to goddamn Brooklyn. And then he did, and he sputtered up the last couple of years. But anyway, so see you, Allen Crabbe. Thought you were going to be good. Didn't quite get there. A couple of weird little injuries here and there, but give me Taurine the Red Bull Prince on his rookie scale contract for the moment instead of Allen Crabbe. You do that a million times out of a million to give up, what, 17? Who cares? That's unreal. Because the best bit after all this is that with two max spots, that Brooklyn Nets are now in a position to feasibly be better than the Boston Celtics next year, which is absolutely amazing. If they get Kyrie and they get Kevin Durant, or if they get Kyrie and then somehow pull a trade for Anthony Davis, it's pretty easy to see that they could be better than the Boston Celtics next year, which is absolutely wild. I mean, with that said, did Brooklyn already give up more for Kyrie than the Celtics did? I did see people talking about this. I'm like, yeah, nah, come on, man. The Celtics gave up 2 years of development for their young dudes, you fucking idiots. So they also gave up a hero in Isaiah Thomas. They also gave up Jay Crowder, who probably could have been a bit handy here and there, even though he was not, shall we say, beloved by the Boston Celtics fans. But still, Brooklyn, all they did was they got Taurean the Red Bull Prince back, and they gave up number 17 in a draft that everyone's like, yeah, that's a fucking shit show anyway. So got to feel pretty good from a Brooklyn Nets perspective, right? And especially when they're like, man, we're going to beat everybody to the punch in free agency, and seems like they're tampering a lot with Kyrie, so I'm on board with that. Even though I still think bringing in Kyrie to a young team is dumb as hell, but still. Anyway, flip side, was this a good trade for the Atlanta Hawks? Kaka, yeah, nah, shit, yeah, they don't care about taking on money. They're rebuilding. They now have 3 picks in the top 20 of this draft. They got 8, 10, and 17. So they can still trade up, like they can package 8 and 10, move up to 6, to 5, whatever. They could package all 3 of them. Who cares? They've got a shit ton of talent already on that team. Or they can just keep all their picks and just have 3 top 20 draft picks join their already young nucleus. So I think this is a great trade for the Hawks. They get Allen Crabbe. They get a free look at him. He's an expiring contract anyway. So look, you basically get pick number 17. You give up Taurean the Red Bull Prince. Away you go. Feel good. Feel good. On you, Hawks. Good job. All right, back to Mark Stevens, the Golden State Warriors dipshit. Was that enough of a punishment for Mark Stevens? Yeah, no. And I tweeted this out, like, earlier. It's like, I reckon this is fucking piss week. A 1-year ban? Fuck you. That should at least be a 5-year ban, if not more. Like, what the fuck are you doing, Mark Stevens, you dipshit? I don't care that he apologized. I don't care about the fine. I agree with LeBron. Like, LeBron came out and actually said, I thought, really, really pretty strongly said, there's absolutely no place in our beautiful game for that at all. There's so many issues here. When you sit courtside, you absolutely know what comes with being on the floor. And if you don't know, it's on the back of the ticket itself that states the guidelines. But he himself being a fan, but more importantly, part owner of the Warriors, knew exactly what he was doing, which was so uncalled for. He knew the rules more than just the average person sitting watching the game courtside. So for that, something needs to be done ASAP. A swift action for his actions. Just think to yourself, what if Kyle Lowry would have reacted and put his hands back on him? You guys would be going crazy, calling for him to be damn near put in jail, let alone suspended for the rest of the finals, all because he was protecting himself. I've been quiet throughout the whole NBA playoffs watching every game, haven't missed one, but after I saw what I saw last night, I took time to let it manifest into my thinking. I couldn't and wouldn't be quiet on this. Hashtag protect the players. Hashtag privilege ain't welcome here. I 100% agree with LeBron. That's fucking wild, man. If Lowry goes in and, like, puts his hands on anybody in that crowd, everyone lose their fucking minds and want him thrown in jail, want him suspended for the rest of the fucking playoffs and everything. And the point is, like, if Kyle Lowry walks into Mark Stevens' fancy pants, fuckwit, fuckboy, venture capital man office and shoved him, pushed him around and told him to go fuck himself multiple times, you better believe that Mark Stevens is getting Kyle Lowry arrested, right? So why is this any fucking different? Like, in short, it should have at least been a five-year ban at least, and go fuck yourself, Mark Stevens. You're easily our Friday fuckwit. Nice. All right, final ones. Is Klay coming back for game 4? Yeah, nah. Yeah, he definitely will. We've already got KD ruled out, but Klay is just definitely going to be fine, I reckon. And I've already sort of touched on this. Do the Warriors bounce back and win game 4? Yeah, nah. Yeah, just watch, man. Klay comes back one-legged, hits some shots. Boogie, he's much better in game 4. They easily win. Their D just picks up a bunch. It is weird, though, that the Warriors have to win 3 of the next 4, right? And they're probably not going to have one of their 2 best players. Everyone's hobbled was fucked. They're playing against a really good team with a top 5 player. But you still feel pretty good about the Warriors? It's weird. That's how good this team is. And finally, I'm going to keep asking it. Can Andrew Bogut still win the finals MVP? Yeah, nah. Yeah. Come on. All right. Unpopular opinion of the day.
Now look at me, please.
Look at me. I still think Allen Crabbe is good. I think his contract led to outsized expectations. If we'd sort of all thought of him as just like a happy role player instead of a dude that you're paying $19 million a year for, expectations kind of got a little bit out of control. And that was kind of Brooklyn's fault, right? They gave him that offer sheet. What's he going to do? Not sign it and get pooed? Anyway, so he finally signs that offer sheet, gets traded after 1 year in Portland, gets to Brooklyn. Everyone's happy. Everything's all good. And then it all sort of falls apart. And it's like, oh, that's kind of sad. But at the same time, if Alan Crabb had actually sort of lived up a little bit more to that contract and been a little bit more reliable, a little bit better on both ends of the floor throughout the goddamn game, like, I don't know, man. The Nets probably wouldn't have been out there trying to trade the guy. Like, he did have a nice little run there where he was sort of back and healthy. What was that, like in mid-Feb? December and into Feb. There was like a couple of moments where he actually had some good stuff going on. But, I mean, for the year, he shot 37% from three. He averaged 9 points in 26 minutes. The rest of his game just wasn't there. He shot 36% from the field overall. That's less than his three-point percentage. There wasn't anything else that he's really offering. There's not much playmaking. There's not much in the way of, like, you know, rebounding or defense. So, yeah, can't feel really bad about it. But it's still, I feel like he could still grow into a, like a better version of a Danny Green sort of dude. He's 27, Alan Crabb, so he's kind of the, you know, who he is. But it becomes incremental improvements, right? That's the Danny Green model. The dead-eye shooter is big enough to cover most wings defensively. Just got to grow into that. And I still feel like he could actually make that happen. So best of luck to you, Alan Crabb. I think you're awesome. All right, and finally, it's Friday at Outback Takehouse. And you know what that means. 4-for-1 icy cold. Oil drum cans full of icy cold Fosters. That's right. No bugger back in Australia drinks this horse piss. Then we're going to flog it off to you Yanks and call it Australian for beer or some shit. Either way, at Outback Takehouse, it goes great with a juicy flame grilled take. And today's flame grilled take is... The Brooklyn Nets will sign Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and still not be a top three team in the East next year. Only at Outback. I mean, that's feasible, isn't it? Like Kyrie and KD, you'd have to be better than what? Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto. Yeah, I kind of like that one. Like Kyrie and KD might take a little while to figure out how to play with the young dudes on the Nets, but it doesn't make them a instant contender, really, does it? Interesting. All right, we'll be back in a second with the Luke Longley bloke who just did their bloody job and the Patty Mills game day Twitter check-in and some other fun stuff right after this.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do it. We've got Andy Bogut. I mean, the Australian Player Watch is just Andy Bogut might now end up getting a start. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow in Game 4, but it's going to be interesting to see if they, have Boogie come off the bench. Maybe? Nah, Bogey comes off the bench and goes out and dominates. Let's see it. But anyway, let's do the Luke Longley bloke who just did their bloody job. Role player, Hall of Fame for this week. And this week it goes to Danny Ainge. What? Hey, Danny. That's right, Danny Ainge, two-time champ in 84 and 86 in the Boston Celtics. He was the perfect bloke to be on those Celtics teams as well, next to Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, Chief, and Kevin McHale. Came off the bench in 84 and always just did his bloody job. He was a starter in 86 as well. And his job was always just to shoot some more and then shoot a little bit more. And the wild part is, like, Ainge's career is kind of indicative of the way the NBA valued three-point shots in the early 80s, right? Like, it's really weird. The dude was a dead-eye shooter. Absolutely dead-eye. Like, was shooting over 50% throughout his bunch of, you know, young career. But never averaged over one... Well, he averaged less than one three-point attempt, not even makes, attempts, less than one until 86. That is absolutely crazy. 3 years later, he was shooting five a game and knocking him down at 40%. Like, that is absolutely wild, isn't it? And that's how it kind of went in the 80s. Everyone's like, oh, look at these shooters. Oh, what's the best way to use them? Should they be shooting from where it's worth more or just worth the same as everything else? The same as everything. What are you idiots doing? But anyway, he was like an absolute dead-eye shooter, and this was awesome. He just did his job, though. He was the third scoring banana for the Celtics. Averaged around that sort of 12 to 15 points a game mark until Bird and McHale started breaking down. And then Ainge stepped up, man. He was averaging 17, 19, every 20 points a game once he got traded to Sacramento in 89. From there, he bounced to Portland, played in another finals, and then went to Phoenix as a super sub. a little bit later in his career and went to another finals. That was absolutely unreal. So really, Danny Ainge is like the ideal 80s and 90s shooting guard, right? He's the ideal shooting guard to have on the 80s Celtics as well, where it's just like, all right, we've got Larry Bird, we've got Kevin McHale, we've got Robert Parrish, just need shooting and a little bit of playmaking around them. And that's what happened. And then the best bit is when he got to Portland and when he got to Phoenix, he did the exact same thing. Got to do it with Clyde Drexler, and then he got to do it with Chuck Barkley and Kevin Johnson. Absolutely unreal. He eventually retired in 95 and coached, then became the Celtics front office head honcho. Pulled off one of the biggest run of heists you can imagine as well. Gets Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, wins a title with them. Then gets all of Brooklyn's picks for about half a decade for a busted ass old Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. Rebuilds on the fly. Absolutely wild times. But either way, Danny Ainge, he was a hard nut, could shoot the bloody lights out, and just did his bloody job, just like one Lucien Longley. Unreal on ya, Danny Ainge. All right, let's get to the Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in, shall we? All right. And there's nothing from Patty Mills at the moment, but we do have a bit of jingling Joe Ingles. Ah, nice. Come on, jingler. What do you reckon? So, Andy Larson. SLC, what is he, the Salt Lake City Tribune beat writer, whatever, he tweeted out, Australian friends, I'm going to your fine country / continent for 10 days in August, September, flying into Sydney out of Perth. Very willing to fly to other cities if it's a good idea. What should I do while I'm there? And Bridget M. Hull tweeted out, go hang out with Joe Ingles. I hear he's a cool dude. Jingler tweeted out, oh, little David. Oh, wait, no. Upside down. Joe Ingles tweeted out, nah, I'm busy. Shrug emoji, cry laughing emoji. Obviously, he knows Andy Larson from many, many, many Utah Jazz locker rooms, including when I was in there at the start of this season. So, nice one. Anyway, and then Jingler jumped on again with Matthew Dellavedova's crazy workout that we said. I think we tweeted out. He's like basically trying to play pickleball. And Dr. Read All the Books tweeted at Jinglin' Joe Ingles, check out Dally. And Jinglin' Joe Ingles tweeted out, lol, yeah, nah, I'm good at Matthew Dally. Crying laughing emoji, cry laughing emoji. it's classic Jinglin' Joe Ingles, isn't it? Unreal. All right, let's quickly finish up with the Game 4 preview and pick.
Game 4 preview. Game preview.
Thanks, Inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem.
Cheers, man. All right, let's check it out. So let's just make sure of the final set of odds before we make our pick. But I think I'm still going to go with the Raptors plus 4.5. If it is still 4.5. Yes, Raptors plus 4.5. I feel like the Warriors win this, but I think it's a close one. And I think the Warriors don't quite cover their minus 4.5. So I think the Raptors are very close. Don't forget, I mean, the Raptors nearly won game 2 anyway. They did win game 1 and 3. But I feel like the Warriors just pull this one out and they win it in a bit of a heart stopper. So give me the Raps plus 4.5 for that. And if you want a quick recap of our 5 favorite bets, Golden State Warriors first quarter winner, Sikkim Siakam, points and rebounds combined over, the Kawhi double-double, the Draymond over 4.5 turnovers, and then your choice of the Raptors money line, the plus 4.5, Steph Curry over 35 plus points and a Golden State win. And the Marc Gasol under 6.5 rebounds. I love that. So there you go. Holy shit. Nice. That's it. Can you believe it? That's it for today. Unbloody real. We are going to be back Monday with our wrap of Game 4 of the NBA Finals and our Game 5 preview, which will be pretty bloody good. So in the meantime, make sure you're all over NBA Story on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. We're all over the socials, even on the weekends. You know that. Get around NBAAustralia.com. If you're going to go buy some shit from Amazon.com, first go to NBAAustralia.com, hit the massive Amazon button on the right-hand side, go do all your shopping, and then they kick us a shekel or two on the back end. Come on, man. Hook us up. It helps out heaps. Come on, man. We do this daily. 301 episodes. Jesus. Also, if you want to help out, chuck us a rating and review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever app you use on your Android phone. If you can rate and review, that helps out heaps. Follow us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, all that good stuff. That helps out, man. Really do appreciate it. And tell a mate, if they're into the NBA and they want to keep up with it, we're right here. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song, but go check out their new band, House Hats, their debut album. Running Out of Time is out now, and it's an absolute ball terror. Easily the best Australian album of 2019 by far. Also, big thanks to Fascinator, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, SexJedi, Green, and Dozers for all the tunes you heard throughout the show. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp and Facey and support them the way they support us. NBA Australia supports Australian bands. All right. And that's it for today. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for all your support of the 300th episode and the campaign to get Joe Ingles on it. But thanks to Isaac Humphreys for coming on this week. That was fucking unreal. I love Isaac Humphreys. And thanks to all of you, the listeners, for letting us get to 300 and actually paying attention. That's fucking unreal. You guys are legends. Appreciate it. All right, we'll catch you on Monday, you dickheads. This is NBA Australia saying, later, Zone! Cooking with Bainesy is filmed in front of a live studio audience. And now it's time for Cooking with Bainesy with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. G'day. Yes, how are you all? Well, look at yous over there. I see you over there again, Cheryl. Yes, we know that you love it. Oh, this is great. Yeah, g'day. Welcome to Cooking with Bainesy. I am your host, Aaron Bangers Bainesy. All right, so this here episode, we're going to whip up one of my absolute favorite Australian staples. You can have it whenever as well, at night, for dinner, after a big night on the Terps. It's that absolute Aussie classic. It is Hawaiian pizza. Oh, yes, that's right. I love me some Hawaiian pizza, and it's easy as to make, mate. I mean, it definitely helps keeping up this physique, if you know what I mean. I reckon I probably cook about three of these bloody things a week, you know what I'm saying? And also, hey, just for yous out there as well, don't bloody listen to anyone who says shit about pineapple on pizza. They can go and do what I tell every center in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. They can go fuck themselves, all right? You can put whatever the fuck you want on pizza. It's pizza. All right, so anyway, Hawaiian pizza is bloody simple, mate. All you gotta do is go down to your soupy and grab yourself a pizza base. I love the spongier, thick ones, you know. Grab a thing of tomato paste. Now, don't bother with the fancy pants shit with basil or oregano in it unless you want to be like all fancy pants and shit. Because then you just grab a bunch of shredded ham from the deli. Grab a bag of shredded cheese. Now, you can have mozzarella, cheddar, home brand, whatever you want. Doesn't matter. It's just bloody cheese. And the key ingredient, a tin of pineapple chunks. Now, it's pretty easy to whip this bad boy up, so let's get to it. All right, here we go. Now, just whip your base out. There you go. All right, now smother it with the tomato paste. Well, yep, there you go. Smooth her out a bit. Just make sure it's all over the entire thing. Now, dump your ham on there. Yep, all this shredded ham. Now, oh, get your fingers amongst that. Shove that to the edges. There you go. Spread that out nice and even. Yep, there you go. All right, now cover this liberally with the dead pig. Come on, man. You got to put the ham everywhere. Just need hoops and hoops and hoops of ham. Just make sure it's the nice shredded stuff, though. All right, now drain your pineapple into the sink. Or you can drain it into a cup and drink that pineapple juice, you know. What bloke doesn't like a cup of pineapple juice, you know what I'm saying, ladies? There we go. Now, fang the chunks of pineapple on there. Just put it everywhere, you know, just throw it around. And then cover up the entire bloody thing with your shredded cheese. All right. Now, we've got this oven over here. Just wang her in there in the oven. There you go. Just for a good 15, 20 minutes at about 220 degrees Celsius. None of that Fahrenheit bullshit. Now, sit back, grab a tin, and let her cook. Oh, doesn't that bloody well smell delicious? All right, now here's one we made a little bit earlier. So you can see once it's browned a bit on the edges and all your cheese is all melty and nice, you whip her out, you chop her up into slices, and Bob is your bloody pizza-loving uncle. Now, give it a sec to cool down before you chow down. Don't burn your bloody tongue because that cheese will be hot as buggery, eh? So, all right, now it's there. Just get your bloody munch on. And that is an absolute bloody ripper of a meal. The best bit is, and this will impress everyone, right? You can cook it whenever you want. Mates, the missus, kids, everyone bloody loves Hawaiian pizza. And if they don't, just give them the old bangers, don't argue, and go tell them to cook their own bloody pizza. because this is just bloody delicious, mate. All right, how easy was that? Cool, there you go. That is absolutely unreal. Love me some Hawaiian pizza. All right, so that's it for this week. Tune in next week for a new recipe, and we'll see you then on the next episode of Cooking with Bainesy.